So welcome everyone to our second 3CL seminar of this academic year. It's a great pleasure seeing you here. My name is Felix Steffek. I'm one of the two co-directors of 3CL, and we are very happy to have today with us Associate Professor Dora Neo. She is based at the National University of Singapore, where she was the founding director of the Faculty Center for Banking and Financial Law. And she led that center for some 10 years, starting in 2013. Her areas of focus include the modernization of trade finance law, global developments in secure transactions law, consumer protection in the finance industry and contract law. And her publications, of which there are many, include the book Trade Finance, Technology, Innovation and Documentary Credits, co-edited at Oxford University Press. And in particular, I'd like to mention the book Secure Transactions Law in Asia, which she co-edits with our faculty chair, Professor Louis Galliford. We're very happy to have Dora with us today, in particular because she's a 3CL visitor and she spends this academic term with us at Cambridge as a visitor with our center. And in addition, she is a visiting fellow at Wolfson College. So Dora, it's a great pleasure having you here. You will speak to us on technology and trade finance law, and we are very much looking forward to that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Felix. Thank you and Irene both for inviting me to speak, and thank you all for coming today. So this seminar will explore technology and trade finance law. After I introduce the landscape of trade financing, I will focus on the most pressing issue in technology and trade financing, which is the digitalization of trade finance. I will discuss how the legal framework for international trade has been an obstacle to digitalization and how this is changing. I will then consider practical obstacles to digitalizing trade finance. And finally, I will discuss how the trade finance community in Singapore is using technology in their operations. Trade financing essentially involves four main aspects. First, the facilitation of payment, the provision of finance, risk mitigation, that is risk of non-payment, risk of loss of the goods. Sometimes this risk can be mitigated by the method of financing chosen, for example, using a letter of credit. Sometimes it has to be mitigated by insurance, for example. And the fourth element would be the provision of information. This could be information regarding the goods, their condition, their movement, and sometimes this information might trigger the financial flow. Common forms of payment would include payment in advance, payment by documentary letters of credit, documentary collections, payments on open account. As for financing, documentary letters of credit are in themselves a form of financing. At the same time, we have common forms like invoice financing, accounts receivable financing, and trade loans. The trade finance process involves many players and many processes. I should say that, in fact, in relation to financing, that most trade international steel transactions actually would have some form of financing, either applied for by the creditor, by the exporter or by the importer. So there are many players and processes involved in the trade financing process, and this can be seen in the next series of slides showing a typical international sale of goods by sea financed by a documentary letter of credit. The chart that I'm going to show is adapted from the ICC chart, a chart prepared by the ICC in 2018. So this chart shows the main players, usually the importer, the exporter, the importer's bank, and usually there would be a correspondent bank involved. they would communicate by some form of interbank messaging system. Typically, this would be SWIFT. The orange lines represent the payment flow, and the purple lines represent potential financing. The shipment process typically involves freight forwarders, pre-shipment inspectors, export terminals, shippers, import terminals. The green lines represent the movement, or the physical movement of the goods. There are various supporting functions. The supporting functions include invoicing platforms, interbank messaging platforms, and also associated parties like the insurer, as well as document couriers and government departments like export and import customs. The process is a complex one, involving many transfers of goods and many transfers of information and of instructions and of documents between the various parties. So the gray lines represent the transfers of documents as well as instructions between the various parties. As you can see, there are many of them. The dominance of paper in the trade finance process makes it a very complex, inefficient, and slow one. And this presents a cost barrier, particularly for small and medium enterprises, resulting in a trade finance gap. Technology has long existed for documents to be in a digitized form, issued in a digitized form, or for them to be digitized from physical documents. But only a tiny proportion of international trade transactions are digitized. And this is a pity because there are huge benefits to be obtained or to be gained from internet if international sale transactions could be in digital form. The most obvious advantages would be faster processing and cost savings. This would also reduce the trade finance gap. Trade Finance Global estimates that while transferring a paper-based document might take 7 to 10 days, processing an electronic document only takes 20 seconds. The Digital Container Shipping Association has estimated that there would be cost savings of $3 billion if only 50% of the container shipping industry adopts electronic bills of lading. And this is in relation to the container shipping industry. As far as the ICC figures show, they suggest that if we take the whole market of trade financing, the savings, if the whole process were to be digitalized, would actually be in the trillions of dollars. Other benefits would be mitigation of fraud. The issuing of trade documents using distributed ledger technology would help with mitigation of fraud, which is a problem in trade financing transactions. A common way of fraud would be by issuing multiple copies of bills of lading. If shipping documents were issued on the blockchain, for example, then they cannot be easily duplicated or altered. Another advantage would be in relation to the greater ease of monitoring compliance. The ability to issue when you have an electronic document, it's much easier to monitor for different aspects like anti-money laundering or sanctions, as well as to look for different customs regulations. With digital documents, it's much easier to flag these non-compliance using AI. There is, of course, the potential environmental positive effect. Think of all the paper that would be saved and all the processes that could be avoided transferring these documents around. And the World Economic Forum actually estimates that it could potentially reduce carbon emissions from logistics by 10 to 12% if we go digital. I mentioned already the lower fraud risk. I think from this slide, I should mention the mitigating mitigating the impact of value chain transactions, value chain disruptions, which I had not talked about earlier. And COVID-19, in fact, had shown us how value chain or how trade, how the supply chain could actually be disrupted quite easily by something unexpected. And during that situation, documents actually could not be transferred easily, and that had resulted in a delay. With digitization, something like that would not happen again. So the ability to issue a document in digital form doesn't necessarily mean that the same rights and obligations would apply to the digital version of the document as they do to the physical document. And this has been potentially very problematic in relation to the Bill of Lading, which arguably is the most important document in the international sale of goods. The Bill of Lading is proof that the carrier has received the goods for shipment. It evidences the contract between the shipper and the carrier. It represents ownership of the goods, and the goods can be transferred easily by just merely transferring possession of the Bill of Lading. When the goods arrive at the port, typically the original Bill of Lading will have to be presented to collect the goods. And therefore, whoever has the bill of lading would have the goods. This is very important to financiers who often use a bill of lading as collateral for any loans that they might make. But the traditional legal framework of international sale relies on concepts like possession and delivery, holder, and these presuppose a paper medium. I have set out two provisions from the Carriage of Goods by Sea Act 1992 of the UK. The Singapore Bills of Exchange Act 1992 has the same provisions because it is based on an earlier version of the UK statute. And we can see from Section 2.1 that a person becomes the lawful holder of a bill of lading. If he is a lawful holder, he will have transferred to him all the rights that under the contract of carriage, as if he had been a party. Section 5 says that references to the holder of a bill of lading are references to any of the following persons, that is, including a person with possession of the bill as a result of completion by the delivery of the bill of any endorsement. So, question is, can electronic documents be possessed? And how can possession be transferred in electronic documents? Under the long-standing law in the UK and in many other countries and other jurisdictions, intangible objects cannot be possessed. And electronic records would fall within this category. So a new legal framework is necessary to facilitate trade digitalization. The UN Commission for International Trade Law took the leadership in this in creating a new legal framework for digital trade documents. And they drafted the UNCITRAL Model Law of Electronic Transferable Records. It's quite a mouthful. I'll refer to it as MLETA for short. And this legal framework was adopted in 2019. What it does is that it enables electronic transferable records to have the same legal effect as physical transferable documents. MLETA operates on several key principles. So first of all, non-discrimination. A document will not be discriminated against just because it is in electronic rather than paper form. Next, the principle of functional equivalence. As long as an electronic document is functionally equivalent, that is serving the same function as a paper version, then it will have the same legal effect as the paper version. The third principle is that of technological neutrality. And this is because the Melita states general principles. It doesn't refer to any specific technology. And this makes it flexible so that it could be relevant even with technological developments. Finally, it is an enabling law. Enabling law means that it doesn't bring forward any new substantive legal rules. The existing substantial law that applies to the relevant type of transferable document applies in the same way to the electronic version of that particular document. Melita has gained increasing influence since its adoption, and it has now been adopted in 12 different jurisdictions. The most recent was the Marshall Islands just a few weeks ago. There are other jurisdictions, including Australia, China, and Japan, that are in various stages of considering the adoption. ICC estimates that in terms of adoption, this would represent about 37% of global GDP, and in relation to the countries that are thinking of adopting or planning towards adopting, this would form 34% of global GDP. So we can see that Melita is really gaining some momentum. It applies to electronic records that are functionally equivalent to transferable documents. So we need to understand what transferable documents are. Transferable documents are paper-based documents, and they entitle the holder to claim performance of the obligation indicated in that document. And they also allow the claim to that performance by transferring the claim by transferring possession of the document. So take a bill of lading that I had mentioned before. The bill of lading will entitle the person with the bill of lading to collect the goods. So in the same way, an electronic bill of lading will provide the same facility, and the bill of lading can be transferred to another person. The new person with possession of the bill of lading would then be able to similarly claim the performance, which is to get the goods. No examples are given of exactly what are transferable documents in Melita, but there are many examples in different jurisdictions, and these would usually cover things like bills of lading, bills of exchange, promissory notes, as well as warehouse receipts, but they would vary according to the specific jurisdiction that we are talking about. So it doesn't mean that any electronic record will qualify as an electronic transferable record. In order to be qualified as an electronic transferable record, to have the same effect as a paper transferable document, it must first contain the information that would be required to be contained in the transferable document. And at the same time, there must be a reliable method to ensure three things. First of all, it must satisfy the requirement of singularity. This means that the electronic record must be identified as the transferable electronic record in question. Secondly, the electronic record must be capable of being subject to control from the time of its creation until the time that it ceases to have any effect or validity. This is important because control is equivalent to possession in the electronic world. And third, the requirement of integrity, where the information that is contained in the electronic record must have remained complete and unchanged from the time of its creation until the time that it ceases to have any effect. And this is important because it guarantees its genuineness. Melita operates on the idea of functional equivalence, so it provides certain functional equivalence of the concepts in the digital world as to the physical world. So if to be equivalent to writing, the information contained in the electronic record must be accessible to be usable for subsequent reference. So in other words, it must be permanent. to be equivalent to a signature, a reliable method must be used to identify the person and to indicate that person's intention in relation to the information contained in the electronic transferable record. Next, the equivalence of possession. Where the law requires possession of a transferable document, this would be satisfied in an electronic record if a reliable method is used to establish exclusive control of the electronic transferable record by a person. That is, exclusive control is one of the important elements of the equivalence of possession, and also to be able to identify that particular person as the person that is in control. And in order to transfer possession, the way that one would do it would be by transferring control. So this requirement of reliable method is quite important because it's a recurring one. It is used to ensure singularity, controllability, integrity of the electronic record. At the same time, it's also required to establish exclusive control, to identify the person that is in control. And Melita gives us guidance on how to see whether or not a method is a reliable method. It must be as reliable as appropriate for fulfilling the function for which the method is being used. And this is to be assessed in the light of all the circumstances. So for example, if the method is being used to assess the integrity of a particular electronic record, then it must be as appropriate as possible for this particular purpose. And there is a list of non-exhaustive circumstances which have to be taken into account. So for example, what are the operational rules relevant to assessing reliability? What is the assurance of data integrity? Is there an ability to prevent unauthorized access and use of the system, the security of the software and the hardware, the regularity and the extent of independent audit, the existence of any declaration by a supervisory body regarding the reliability of the system, as well as any applicable industry standard. There is an alternative way of showing reliability, and that is if this method has already been proven in fact to have fulfilled the function, then there is no need again to reassess whether or not it is a reliable method. There are other aspects covered in Melita, and one aspect that I want to highlight to you is the possibility is the possibility of replacing a transferable document with an electronic transferable record, and the possibility of replacing an electronic transferable record with a paper document. And this is important because we can see that trade documents might pass through different countries, and some countries may exclusively operate by electronic means, some countries may exclusively operate by paper means, so it's important to be able to transfer from one to the other, and certain safeguards are provided in Melita. Ultimately, the rights and obligations of the parties would remain the same, regardless of whether it is a paper or a digital document. So Singapore is one of the countries that has adopted Melita, and this was done in 2021. This was done by way of an amendment to our existing Electronic Transactions Act. So our Electronic Transactions Act previously had no provision relating to transferable documents, and this was added in 2021. Singapore was merely the second jurisdiction to adopt Melita. The first was Bahrain, and really Singapore was the first, if we look at the world's maritime and trading hubs, to adopt Melita. The provisions in the Singapore statute are largely similar. In fact, they are lifted or enacted from Melita, but there is one significant deviation from Melita. And this is that the Singapore statute provides for the making of regulations to support the registration and the accreditation of providers of electronic transferable record systems. It also provides that when you have any proceedings involving an electronic transferable record, and this transferable electronic transferable record is issued by means of an accredited electronic transfer system, then it will be presumed that the record satisfies the requirements of reliability in the statute, unless the contrary is proven. In other words, if you have an electronic record issued by an accredited management system, then there is no need to prove that it is reliable. It is presumed to be so, unless it is proven otherwise. And this is quite a significant provision, because the idea of whether a method is a reliable method is likely to be one that would be raised in litigation on this statute. UK also has adopted the MLETR, and this is done in the form of the UK Electronic Trade Documents Act, which came into force in September 2023. It is based on MLETA, and it achieves the same objectives, although there are some differences in terminology, in detail, and in structure. The UK statute uses the terminology of electronic trade documents instead of electronic transferable records. And it applies to electronic versions of paper trade documents. What is a paper trade document? It is one that is used in connection with trade in or transport of goods, or the financing of trade or transport of goods. And specific examples are given in the Electronic Trade Documents Act. They mention, for example, a bill of exchange, a promissory note, a bill of lading, a warehouse receipt, a maritime insurance policy. And these documents may be wider than what might fall within MLETA. So the UK Electronic Trade Documents Act sets out various requirements for electronic trade documents. It sets out requirements for a reliable system to ensure singularity, control, integrity, etc., as well as standards of reliability. And these requirements very much overlap with the requirements of MLETA, with a difference in detail, and I won't go further into them. Instead of providing for functional equivalence, the UK statutes provides directly that a person can possess, endorse, and part with possession of an electronic electronic trade document, and that transfer of the document is equal to transfer of the rights in the document. It also provides that the electronic trade document would have the same effect as the equivalent paper trade document. Lord Holmes of Richmond was a very strong supporter of the bill, and he had hailed this bill as one of the most important bills that you have never heard of. He said it was a small-sounding bill, but that will have colossal effect, and that it will transform trade. So obviously, a lot of promise is seen in this bill. As the UK is a major trading nation, and many international commercial transactions are governed by English law, the Electronic Trade Documents Act would potentially be relevant to many transactions even outside of the UK. So the availability of MLETA provides a legal framework for electronic documents that removes the major stumbling block hindering digitalization of trade finance. Nevertheless, there are some potential challenges and uncertainties. So the full effect of Melita will be felt only when more countries enact compatible laws. For example, if 80% of the major trading countries in the world do so. It is also uncertain how Melita-based statutes would be interpreted and applied by the local courts. The requirement of reliable method is likely to be a source of litigation. There are likely to be arguments, for instance, whether an electronic document qualifies as an electronic transferable record, whether there is sufficient control to be the equivalent of physical possession. While some of the countries that trade would be taking place would have adopted Melita, it is quite likely that trade would also take place between parties in countries that have incompatible laws and conflict of laws rules that would be needed to resolve these particular difficulties, and these rules are in the course of being developed. In fact, the UK Law Commission has just issued a consultation paper on private international law rules under electronic trade documents. Any existing rules that were crafted in relation to paper documents might be outdated when we bring them into the digital environment. Even where we have a Melita-based Melita-based law, for example, English law is chosen as the governing law, such a choice might not be respected by the courts in foreign countries. And even where the choice is respected, the application of English law in a foreign court might lead to quite different results from what the parties might have anticipated. With the legal framework in place, does that mean that the digitalization of trade finance will now proceed smoothly and rapidly? Well, there are some practical challenges. The first is standardization. So in order for widespread digitalization to succeed, it is important to harmonize the standards for different electronic documents and systems. Some progress has already been made on this front because various stakeholders in the international trade community have taken steps of setting standards on various matters, and I have just listed some of them on this slide. Another problem might be the interoperability of systems, because there might be different formats and systems which are used for trade documentation across different jurisdictions. And systems could differ even within the same jurisdiction across different participants. So there is a need to work towards interoperability so that these systems are compatible with each other and electronic trade finance can function seamlessly. For developed countries, legacy systems will have to be transformed and to meet interoperable standards, and personnel will need to be retrained. For less developed countries, the transformation will have to be one that is more fundamental, starting from changing from a paper environment to a digital environment. Capacity building will be needed, and all this will involve huge costs and effort. Developing trusted technology is another practical challenge, because with increasing electronification, this is crucial in order to satisfy various requirements, for example, the requirement of a reliable method under Melita and similar laws. So I should move on to talk about Singapore. And how the legal and trade finance community in Singapore is using technology in trade finance. First, I want to talk about the Trade Finance Registry. This was set up in order to combat fraud, which is a problem in trade finance, as I had mentioned. It is managed by the Association of Banks in Singapore, and it contains a centralized record of trade finance transactions in Singapore. There have been notorious examples of letter of credit frauds in recent years, precipitated by the COVID-19 delays, as well as the rise in fuel prices in Asia. And in fact, it led to the fall of Hin Leong Trading, one of Asia's largest fuel suppliers. And the setting up the trade finance registry was the industry's way of fighting back. So the way that the trade finance in the trade finance registry works is that participating banks will register their new trade financing transactions on the trade finance registry. And the data on the trade finance registry is hashed into an encrypted format so that matching different trades can be done without exposing the bank's underlying data fields to other participating banks. And if any new transaction is found to be duplicated, this will trigger an alert in near real time, and banks can then take action. Another body that has been set up is the Singapore Trade Data Exchange, and this is a public database. It facilitates data sharing between supply chain ecosystem partners, and Trade Finance Registry and SG TradeX have collaborated to give the service, which is called Bill of Lading Genuineness Check. This will enable banks in Singapore to verify the genuineness of bills of lading in real time. And the way that it does is that this genuineness check uses a secure end-to-end connection between Trade Finance Registry, SG TradeX, as well as carriers as well as carrier consolidators. So it would be much easier to verify the genuineness of bills of lading. The last is Trade Trust, and this is developed by the Infocom Development Authority of Singapore, which is the IMDA. It is a digital framework. It enables the issuance, endorsement, verification, and transmission of electronic trade documents. There is technical interoperability and legal interoperability because businesses can create and issue their own trade trust enabled bills of lading using blockchain technology, even where the parties are on different trade finance platforms. The other advantage of trade trust is that the bills of lading are designed to comply with the criteria for electronic transferable records under Melita. So there is legal interoperability. And Trade Trust has been recognized as an interoperable digitalization framework by the WTO and ICC Digital Standards Initiative. So the Trade Trust framework has achieved several firsts. I won't go into them because I see that time is running out. I'll just mention them. I'm just mentioning the first and the most recent. So in November 2021, it conducted the world's first cross-border digital financing pilot. And this used simulated bills of lading between Singapore and the Abu Dhabi global market. And most recently, in April 2025, Singapore's IMDA and the Beijing Two Zone Office had executed the world's first fully paperless interoperable documents against payment trade transaction for the export of canned food from China to Singapore. So what conclusion can we draw? Well, there is a new legal framework. The technology for digitization is attainable. What's next? And really all categories of all stakeholders, whether local or international, they must step up and take action, make plans, collaborate in order to harness the full potential of digitalization. This is probably a topic for another talk, but essentially all stakeholders would be involved, including governments, trade policy makers, standard setting organizations, the trade finance industry, trade associations, financial institutions, marine insurers, IT infrastructure providers, and they would have to take various actions, promoting the adoption of enabling legal frameworks, upgrading digital infrastructure, undertaking the development of standards, as well as open and interoperable trusted technology agreements and frameworks to build capacity, to change mindsets. And essentially, I believe we have to be patient and focus incrementally on the changes that would have to make, that would make the most difference. In a recent publication, the ICC suggests, using the analogy of an outdated road system, that instead of trying to upgrade all the roads at once, that the best approach would be to build a few digital superhighways that other roads can then plug into gradually. Well, thank you very much for your attention.